We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. I mean, just saving the world one soundbite at a time. I got plenty of stuff to talk about today, but I'm gonna tell you right now that whole monologue right there, all about the Benjamins. That's where we're headed first. I mean, the whole first dipper is called All About the Benjamins. It galls me when you see government pretending that it's their money, and like they need more of it, and then they're gonna have a budget surplus, so they're gonna do more stuff from government. Meanwhile, you and I are spending more on a gallon of gas, spending more on just buying milk and bread, spending more on trying to fix the kids' lunch for school, try to buy some clothes for your children. I mean, this, all the things that we do in daily life are more expensive right now, but there is zero effort on the part of government to try and do something meaningful to bring relief. I just find this to be antithetical to good government, if you get down to it. Because what we're looking at right now, and I know what's going to happen. I've been down there in Montgomery before, and I've been there for the budget processes. It's very difficult. I'm not going to try and pretend it's not. I mean, when you've got billions of dollars and the appropriations are flying, and people are asking for this budget to go there and this budget to go there, and everybody needs a little something over here, and all the different department heads are telling you why they need more stuff, and they can't possibly downsize. How could you do that? I mean, for the love of God. But how many of them would make it in the private sector, I wonder sometimes? I mean, seriously, how many of them would make it in the private sector where they have to actually balance a budget, but, oh, by the way, still cut a paycheck and then pay taxes on it to the government? It's maddening. Text lines are open, 833-687-4448. Had a little bit of technical difficulty during the break, so if we entered back in late, I apologize. But nonetheless, we are here, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Jimmy from North Alabama says, if state budget is a surplus, why is the legislature trying to increase a sales tax for internet purchases? By the way, I just heard that, Jimmy. You're right. I heard that right before I went on the air today. I mean, it dropped in. In fact, let me find the note that somebody posted for me to see. I've got some guys that we trade information back and forth through direct messages. And he says, where'd it go? Darn it, I can't find it now. They're looking at raising the online sales tax. It's a bill carried by Representative Chris England, who's a Democrat. But apparently there's some Republicans that want to join in. Now listen, sales tax exists, right? Sales tax revenues on the brick and mortars may be down, but a lot of folks are still ordering by Amazon or getting their stuff, you know, sent by the mail. And so there's an online sales tax. It's been there for years, and it's flat. It's fixed, and we did that on purpose when I was in the legislature to streamline the processes, because if you've got a sales tax is different in Jefferson County than it is in Madison County than it is in Barber County or whatever, then how's Amazon going to figure that out times 67 counties times 50 states? So we said, here's an easy way to do it. We'll just fix it. We just made it one number. It's not going to change. Everybody's on board. By legislative act, we said the tax that's always existed is going to be now fixed, and it will be this. And it's easier for everybody to handle. Now they want to raise it, apparently? I mean, I'm shocked by this. You just had a budget surplus. I'm about to be on the warpath with this All About the Benjamins thing, but you cannot possibly say that the best thing in the world to do is take more money from people in a down economy while you're also in the middle of a budget surplus. That's just wrong, man. Wrong on several layers. Scott from Russellville says, great monologue. I always get disgusted with all the expensive audiovisual equipment, the huge flat screen TVs purchased at the end of the government year just to spend the excess money so they could ask for more in the next cycle. Yes, absolutely, man. You're exactly right. All right, listen, I appreciate all of you. We will be right back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Stay tuned. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, y'all. I'm just telling you, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. So yeah, story on 1819 News right this minute. All right, it was just posted a little while ago. The Senate, State Senate, has now approved the largest ever $3.7 billion general fund budget. Well, that's cool. Now, here's the thing that I have found. Once you increase the budget, good luck making it go back later on. So what they just did was pretty much extend the future of expenditures ad nauseum. So there's, by the way, I will say this, there's a couple of things that you need to know. So in Alabama, we do have some pretty solid budgeting processes. I'll say that. And I'm pretty proud to have been a part of getting them in place. So when the Republicans took over the legislature for the first time in 136 years in 2010, when my class got elected, we set about to change the fiscal landscape of the state. So the first thing we did is Alabama actually has a constitutional provision that requires a balanced budget. Cool. Sounds great, right? Except Democrats in the past had always just spent whatever they wanted to, just trusting that if they didn't get there, the governor would just call for proration. What's proration? Proration is where you get halfway through the year and the governor realizes he's not going to have enough money based on current projections, and he's going to have to cut the budget in mid-year. Well, they passed a balanced budget. It was the governor that prorated it. No, legislature, you did a sorry job. During my campaign speeches, I used to always say, because they were prorating all the time, I used to always say, if your budget gets prorated in mid-year, it means it wasn't balanced to begin with. So there's that. In the last, see, that was 2010. So 2011 would be the first budget that we got a chance to really work on. So since 2011 now, 13 years, you have not seen the word proration in state government at all, because we changed the way we did some things. And one of those we did was we put in reserve accounts. Reserve accounts are now in place. Alabama is one of the only states in the nation that has two budgets. You have an education budget. All of everything that goes into education goes into the ETF, the Education Trust Fund. And all of everything else it takes to run the state, like, you know, highways and Department of Corrections and state troopers and the court system and mental health and whatever else, Medicaid, it all goes into the general fund budget. And so we put rolling reserve accounts now into both budgets. The first one we did was education. The education budget, by the way, is the biggest budget, partly because it's such a monolithic, it's a giant thing, right? All of education in Alabama is huge. When you take in K-12, the college systems, the two-year system, all of it. But all that to say, it also gets all of what we like to call the growth taxes for the most part. And we had to change some of that because the teachers union, with all of its power and clout with the Democrats before, had arranged it so that you could wind up seeing all of the good taxes, I say the good tax, the growth taxes, the ones that go up in a good economy, like sales tax, all they fed the education budget. All the stagnant taxes, the ones that don't go up at all, like property taxes that tend to stay the same, those go to the general fund. So we had to change some of that. So your budget processes are better, and that's why you're still seeing the benefits of it through surpluses even now. And they're going to keep on spending it, apparently. I just realized I've got a caller on the line. I apologize. Let me just jump over there and grab that real quick. Mike from Harvest. Hey, Mike, thanks for holding. I was sitting here just talking away, brother. I apologize.
Not a problem, Phil. Not a problem. How are you today, sir?
I'm good, man. What's on your mind?
Well, I had a question. When they last passed the 1% decrease in the sales tax last year, and you know, all their projections were, well, we're not sure if we can, you know, do that again this year. It doesn't look good. But yet they're taking all this budget surplus, so why can't they reduce the sales tax again?
Yeah, you're talking about it wasn't the overall sales tax, it was just the grocery tax. So they literally just removed a portion of the sales tax upon certain food items. And it's right. It's a great question. I mean, so apparently their projections were not what they came out to be. But I will say this, part of what we're looking at right now is a budget surplus, allegedly, that gives them the ability now to pass one of the biggest budgets ever. But the one I'm talking about right now is the general fund, and that is not affected by the tax cut you're talking about.
All right. But even if the general fund took in all of this money, how much more has government grown since, 2020.
Oh, you're exactly right. And listen, what was so aggravating during 2020 when they were getting all this massive tranches of COVID relief dollars from the federal government? How much of that did you see in the form of tax relief? Did they cut your tax at the pump? Yeah, exactly.
Zero.
They use it to fund government, to pay for the unemployment compensation fund, to pay people to not have to be at work. And then on top of that, everybody else was shutting down their brick and mortar stores while online and government employees never missed a paycheck.
Well, absolutely. But, you know, that's always one of my issues, is how many of those departments have been so bloated up that, one, or how many new departments and boards and study groups and et cetera that are all attached to the government tits that we don't need and that really need to be just done away with and pruned away.
Well, there's a movement right now.
About that.
Yeah, there's a movement right now. So what, a few years ago, I tell you what, I'm going to go ahead and hang up. We got a lot of background noise, and I'll talk to what you just said. Thanks for calling in, Mike.
Sorry.
It's all right.
Sorry about that. I'm in the car.
No worries, man. Have a great day. So he's got a great point. So consolidations and streamlining of government. Yes. When we came in 2010, one of the things that we tackled in the first few years was looking at what we called siloed institutions of government, departments that seemed to have overlapping, mission sets, and yet they were each one in their own silo, just doing their own thing, costing their own, some of them had software that was supposed to talk to each other and didn't, and they were just, it was like redundant services. Well, one of the biggest ones was law enforcement, and some have said ALEA wound up not getting smaller. I think what's happened is ALEA has grown since then, but the Alabama Law Enforcement Agency, we used to have multiple enforcement agencies and police arms around the state, all of which are crucial. The Alabama Bureau of Investigation, the State Forensics Lab, the different departments that had investigative authorities, and then, of course, state troopers. And you look at the way they were set up before, they were all over the place, each one with their own like mission sets that were slightly different but yet the same and doing their own thing. So we streamlined them and brought them all into one, and we put into place, and I carried one of the bills that said that by natural attrition, we would begin to reduce government, and we did. There's another movement right now. Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth has a package of bills that is currently before the legislature, one of which would take several state departments and roll them into one and create a secretarial position. I think that's going to wind up being an important look. I'd like to see that it's going to downsize as opposed to just bloat, but I think it has the ability to, once again, remove some redundant systems and siloed departments and put them into one place and put one person in charge of it so that you can reduce some of the cost of government. I hope that's the case because, y'all, the Benjamins are flying right now. Before I hit to the break, let me just tell you this story on 1819 News. The general fund budget passed last session was $3.1 billion. This year, $3.7 billion. So they've got an increase of several percentage points. The proposed fiscal year 2025 budget also includes a 2% cost of living adjustment for state employees. That's non-education. This is just state employees. So they're getting all the government employees are getting a raise. They're getting more money. They're putting money into some things, some of which I'm sure is good and some of which is just extra. But I'm looking at by his own admission, State Senator Greg Allbritton, chairman of the General Fund Budget Committee, he's a good guy. He's a friend of mine. He said the total budget was a substantive increase compared to the current fiscal year's budget. That's great, except that I look at it and think, government's doing pretty good right now. Government's making out quite well. Government's collecting more Benjamins than apparently they needed. What if they had just level funded from the previous year? Would that have been so bad? Could they have level funded and then given a tax relief, a tax credit of some kind? Could they have done something to put more in the reserve? Could they have paid back any state debt? Could they have done anything like that? I don't know because I'm not there to see every bit of the budget processes, but I'll just tell you this. I think the answer is going to wind up being yes. They could have chosen to do some of that had they had the desire to do so. Because right now we have a Republican supermajority. Democrats have no sway whatsoever unless there's a bipartisan issue that's, got, some movement. Republicans could do anything they wanted to right now. The question is, do they want to? So when you're asking, you know, questions about the budget, knowingly ask these questions. Hey, I understand the general, if you tell them you know about the general fund and the ETF, the education budget, if you know that there's two budgets, you're automatically going to raise their hackles because they're going to realize you know stuff. And then ask them, I see your budget's increased, and yet the economy being what it is, doesn't that mean that you got more than was necessary at a time when we were all struggling out here? Could you not have done something to help the average citizen? Well, we did good things, and we built new stuff, and we gave you more to your essential services that government likes to provide. Okay, I'm not going to see that. Will that change the cost of my milk and bread? Will that put money in my child's college fund? Is that going to do something for my retirement? I doubt it. I will say this. One thing that does give me some measure of comfort is the fact that these are not career politicians. Most of the legislature, most of them, are people who have two jobs, the legislature and something else. There's a few who are retirees, but for the most part, you've got a lot of people down there who have had to run a business or be out in the private sector, and they get it. We need them to get a little more. We're going to take a break right now. I'll come right back and I'll tell you about some things that are coming out of the D.C. side of things. Oh, Biden's got some glowing reports about, you know, what's happening with Bidenomics until you look at the real numbers. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Like making common sense like a superpower. So, yeah, I'm in number one of the triple dipper here. All about the Benjamins. Government taking your money. Government got some money to spend. Got a little folding money, friend. You got a little folding money getting out back here. What's that line for? Oh, you never seen Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou, have you?
Nope.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Man. I'm just going to have to, like, get all these movies lined up for you and just say, tell me when you're done. I mean, there's some classics out there, brother. You got to see. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou is a hoot.
I mean, I heard it was a good movie.
Oh, it's
just never seen it.
It's one of the best one-liner movies ever made. I mean, there's so many. Anyway, that's what I did. I just quoted a one-liner.
Okay.
I don't know why we're talking about this right now. Can I get back to the topic now? I think I shall. Okay. The folding money, yeah. All right. Townhall.com's got a piece. Biden wasted no time trying to spin those March inflation numbers. So guess what? The March inflation numbers, they were not good. Shows that the consumer price index went up, what, I think 3.7%? Not where they thought it was going to be. It was surely going to be good. Inflation numbers on the rise for the third month in a row, says townhall.com. President Joe Biden, though, is attempting to spin the numbers as a success, claiming that they're still down from the highs under his tenure in the White House. This is like saying, okay, I was driving 80 miles an hour, officer, but I lowered it to 70 when I saw you. Even though the speed limit was 55, you can at least see I was slowing down. Okay, doesn't quite work like that. You ruined the economy, and the fact that it's a little bit better than it used to be, but it's still climbing back in the wrong direction again, does not give you credit, Mr. President. God almighty. I mean, the spin is nauseating. He says, this is his quote, today's report shows inflation has fallen more than, you know what, I'm reading this in far too manly and assertive a voice. I need to read it more like him. Today's report shows inflation has fallen more than 60% from its peak, but we have more to do to lower costs for hardworking families. Prices are still too high for housing and groceries. You think? Even as prices for key household items like milk and eggs are lower than a year ago, are they? Are they really? He said, I have a plan to lower costs for housing by building and renovating more than 2 million homes. Come again? The President of the United States says that he's going to lower the cost of housing by building and renovating more than 2 million homes. Well, first of all, can somebody do the math? What's 2 million divided by 50 states? Big Rig, you got a calculator? Hit that one for me there. 2 million divided by 50. And just tell me roughly how many. I mean, I realize it's not going to be spread out that evenly, but just get an idea what that would even mean to us. But what's the number? What you got?
It's $100 million.
No. That's not what I'm asking you. How many would that be if there was, if there's 50 states, 2 million divided by 50?
Oh, 2 million divided by 50.
Yes.
Okay. All right. The wrong math there. Okay. Divided by 50, that'd be 40,000.
40,000 per state.
Yeah.
40,000 new homes by state. This is ridiculous. Where's that money coming from? Here's the deal. The numbers tell a different story. Here's a list for you. You ready? Since Biden took office, this is fresh. Since Biden took office, gas is up 47.8%. Groceries are up 21.1%. Just going out to eat on the average is more than 20% an increase. Baby food, 30%. Why? What is it about baby? They know they've got you. You got to feed the child, right? Pet food, up 23%. Rent on the average is 20% higher than it used to be before Biden took office.
I know the pet food is a lot more expensive. I used to spend like $16 for like a bag.
Yeah.
A big bag.
Yeah.
And now it's like 30 bucks.
It's okay. Did they just start grinding up different stuff in there? What I mean,
it's double the price of what it used to be.
Good gosh. Used cars are average of 20% higher than they used to be. Airfare. If you want to fly somewhere, 32% more than it used to be. This is nuts. And here's the thing. Real average weekly earnings are down 3%. So what we're looking at here is the cost of living has increased. The ability to absorb that cost of living has decreased. And yet Biden is saying, I think it's getting better. Really? Okay. He's attempting to spread to spin the numbers, is what we're looking at here. But here's the thing. Story on Daily Caller. He has no plans to pivot. What he's doing is great. What he's doing is fine. We can't pivot now. You know why? Because the pridefulness out of this administration is so great that they will not admit when they need to change policy. They can't do it. I mean, we saw Bush commit the surge in Afghanistan, change in policy. We saw a fiscal turnaround in the Clinton administration, of all things, and change the policy. We saw policies change during Obama. We saw policies change during Trump. And yet right now what we're looking at is failure at every level. The election's coming up. Wouldn't you like to think he'd do something that like people go, oh, thank you. Oh, appreciate that. Could you, I don't know, maybe build a wall? Could you at the southern border? Could you, I don't know, do something to lower the cost of gas? There's a great idea. Could we please just Mr. President, could we stop trying to pay off everybody's student loans and worry more about, I don't know, fiscal policy that impacts inflation? Is the Fed ever going to change the interest rate? In the meantime, the White House is reportedly planning to tout its efforts to lower prescription drug costs. Great, according to the Wall Street Journal. Jared Bernstein, the chief of the White House Council of Economic Advisors. By the way, what's his claim to fame? How do you put that job on a resume? What'd you do? I worked for Biden. I was his chief economic advisor. Okay, thank you for coming in. We'll talk more about it when we get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all, stay tuned. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Phil Williams, here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two on this Friday. And we're in number one of the Triple Dipper, all about the Benjamins. And so I just told you a moment ago. So we talked about the state. We're in a down economy. The state still has a budget surplus. They just increased the budgets at the state level. You and I aren't seeing any major tax relief out of it nonetheless. And then on the federal level, the economy is what it is. We know what the cost of bacon is. We can look at it. We can go to the grocery store. Big Rig's talking about having to buy dog food right now. I mean, you know, if you make your kids lunches, it's frustrating. You see the cost of peanut butter going up, for crying out loud. But Biden has no plans, according to the Daily Caller, no plans to pivot, no plans to shift, nothing. The consumer price index went up 3.5% last month. It's a 3.5%. It's much higher than what was anticipated. Wall Street Journal says there is no claim, no plan to shift the policies. Jared Bernstein, Jared Bernstein is the chair of the White House Council of Economic Advisors. And I was saying before the break, if you could hear it, I'll say it again. What exactly is his claim to fame? Can you imagine? He's going to leave this gig and go interview for another gig And they're going to say, Mr. Bernstein, it appears here on your resume that you were the chair of the White House Council of Economic Advisors during the largest economic downturn in recent history. Yes, I was. Thank you for coming in. That's what we're going to. Why would you hire that guy? He'll probably get some professor emeritus job so he can talk about how great things are that didn't turn out great for us. The president and his allies have abandoned the use of Bidenomics, though. That's kind of funny. So remember there for a while, like in January, he's like giving speeches. I'm here to talk about Bidenomics. Bidenomics. They quit using the term. He hasn't used it since January. Just let's forget we said that. His former chief of staff, Robert Klain, reportedly voiced his frustrations with the White House communication strategy. Apparently, there's a tape of him that got out that shouldn't have gotten out, where he's basically fed up using some profane language and talking about the fact that Biden needs to quit running around cutting ribbons on bridges. He says, I'll tell you, if you go into the grocery store, you go to the grocery store, you know, eggs and milk are expensive. And the fact that there's a blankety blank bridge is not blankety blankety blank. So what he's basically saying is, I worked for the president and I can't figure out why he's doing what he's doing. Meanwhile, theblaze.com, I'll remind you, 7 more states just filed another lawsuit on Tuesday against the Biden administration because they're going to pay off student loans. It's going to be awesome. $45.6 billion are set for debt cancellation. Whoop, whoop. Except it is clearly going to be an uphill battle. Those of y'all that are out there or know people that are, they're like, my student loan might go away. This could be really good. Don't hold your breath. Because Biden's making promises he probably can't keep. Then again, what's new? The attorney general for Missouri said this, said, with the stroke of his pen, Joe Biden is attempting to saddle working Missourians with $500 billion in debt. The United States Constitution makes clear the president lacks the authority to unilaterally cancel student loan debt from millions of Americans without express permission from Congress. That's okay. It's about making promises on the Benjamins. Look, here's the thing. You hear about this at the state level. We talked about Montgomery a minute ago. You hear about this at the federal level. Yes, we're seeing things that shouldn't be. How about the local level? Because yes, your mayors and city councils, they can do things. They can do things that impact you and I. We've seen some major expenditures coming out of the Birmingham budget processes that you look at, and liberal mayor Randall Woodfin leading the charge to, you know, spend money on DEI and other things that, you know, sound neato gee whiz, but what do they do for true quality of life? And then you got things like this. How about the city of Denver? Just today, story on the Daily Signal. Denver is now set to defund its police and firefighters to help pay for illegal aliens. By the way, if they want to blame Texas, they can try. But the truth of the matter is, they set themselves up as a sanctuary city. Denver did. Set themselves up as a sanctuary city. And said, come one, come all. Well, guess what? They did. One of the, outside of Texas, Denver has had one of the largest influxes of illegal immigrants coming in. But now they're going to cut their police department by another $8.4 million, which is almost 2% of its budget. They're going to wind up cutting the Denver Fire Department by almost 1% of its budget. They're going to cut the mayor's office, which is leading by example, and I'm glad, by about 9.6% of the budget. They're going to cut the sheriff's department's contributions down 2.2%. Department of Public Health, Department of Public Safety, Department of Transportation, all getting cuts. And the Democrat mayor is excited, celebrating the plan, contending it was the best option to be able to provide services to all of the newcomers. 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 The reality is, and I'll wrap it up with this and take some text messages. The reality is, California GOP leaders right here are a classic example of why this is a problem. You give that many Benjamins, you have to question where they're going to go. Story on Fox News right here shows literally that $24 billion was sent to the state of California to tackle their homeless crisis. And the state auditor's report out there now found that they cannot explain where it went. It's just nauseating. Let me do this. Big Rig, I got somebody on the line right now. I can take that. Line one, Aaron from Huntsville. Hey, Aaron, how you doing?
Hey, hey. They can't figure out what they did with it, can they?
No, they can't.
Kind of like Rumsfeld on September 10th when he lost $2.3 trillion. That's with a T. And so earlier you were talking about Biden and how he's able to boast about Bidenomics and how great his economy is doing. Well, the reason why his economy is doing so great is because he's comparing it to Trump's economy. And so Trump is the one that started off the printing, digital printing spree. And so he printed out $8 trillion, then he printed out $4 trillion. And so the only reason why Biden looks good is because Trump did so bad. And so I'm trying to understand.
Let me get this straight. You're gonna tell us right now that the 3.5% increase in the consumer price index last month is because of Trump?
I'll tell you that 85% of statistics are made up on the spot.
You didn't answer my question. We're 3 years past Trump. Are you still gonna blame the Biden economy on Trump?
I'm blaming it on the Federal Reserve. So I'm actually blaming it.
I'll be honest with you. I think the Federal Reserve does owe us some explanations as to why they're not cutting rates yet. When you have that much surplus printed cash being thrown into the economy, like through the American Relief Plan, the COVID relief plans, the infrastructure, the Build Back Better, when you have that stuff being slung into the economy at that pace. Without the demand and the supply chain being disrupted, you got a recipe for disaster. Biden did that.
Yes. It's simple math. And so, yeah, if you increase the total money supply by, I think they said 40% or 60%, the total money supply has been increased. And so we know that all the fascist corporate, business people with their lobbyists are the ones that get it all.
Okay, but I'm still trying to go back to your point because Trump was not a spendthrift. I'm not trying to say that but he did give us the Trump tax cuts. He did have several policies in place that drove the economy to a much higher optimal level.
All that's irrelevant when you print.
Hang on a second. You don't get to just interrupt. It's not irrelevant. You called in to ostensibly say that the problems we're having right now are still because of Trump because he did something a few years ago.
He printed the most money. Yeah, he printed the most money.
You think he printed more money than what the Biden economy has printed?
Absolutely. Look it up.
Multi-trillions of dollars of COVID relief and everything else. Build Back Better, infrastructure, debt reduction plan, so to speak. And you think that's all?
What's the numbers? Tell me the numbers.
You're the one who called in.
I'll tell you the numbers. You want the numbers? Okay. Trump spent, I think, $12 trillion. I think Biden's at $9 trillion.
No, that's actually not correct. You've got multi-trillion dollars more. Listen, this is not 20 questions. The bottom line is you called in here because you wanted to be able to blame Trump for Biden's economy 3 years after Trump left office. You don't get that joy.
Trump shut everything down. Trump injected everybody with experiments.
What you're looking at right now is a Biden economy. So I'm assuming you vote Democrat.
I don't trust any of these liars, dude.
Okay, but I'm assuming you – listen, the bottom line is you don't get the luxury of calling in 3 years after the fact and trying to pretend that the current president has no ownership over what is happening right now.
Oh, no, he's just following suit.
All right, thanks for the call, man.
He's a copycat.
Not going to work. I got a few text messages before we go to the break. Alex from Elkmont says, in 2006, I got out of high school, went to work on the Arsenal. The older guys I work with had already been there in every office building. We remodeled some 2 years ago just so these government buildings could keep on getting maintenance budgets. Yeah, I've seen some of that on every military installation. Barry from Guntersville, by the way, reminded me, "Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?" was one of the greatest movies ever. Reminds me of his father, he says. Miss him dearly. Barry, it's an awesome movie. Unfortunately, my wife doesn't like it. So if I'm going to watch reruns of it, it has to be when she's not there. And that's
just, why doesn't she like it?
She's just, I don't know. Something about it just gets on her nerves. I don't know. It's an odd movie, I'll be honest, but it's still good. JT Lacey Springs says, ice cream, our local grocer, a half gallon of Blue Bonnet, $9.84 out the door. Come on! And then Gary from Decatur, Bidenomics. That's almost as catchy as Obamacare. True that. All right, listen, we're taking a break right now. We're coming right back, and we'll be switching gears, heading to the new one. Live free or die, y'all. Second Amendment. Are they coming after it? Apparently. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.